We did a little synopsis last week about, you know, we've talked from John 13 to John 17 was one day. It was Thursday there in Jerusalem where Jesus was with his apostles. And then he's arrested sometime around midnight in the garden. You know, he's betrayed Judas and then arrested. And then we started talking about his trials with the high priest and so forth. And then they're going to continue for some time. And those continue until about 6 or 7 in the morning. And remember, he's not had any rest whatsoever. So he's going to go through four trials. He's going to go through four separate trials before he is finally crucified sometime around 9 o'clock Friday morning. So that's kind of the general outline, timeline that Jesus goes through. We were in John chapter 18 last week. Almost finished that little section. This is the first stage of that Jewish trial. And it's John chapter 18. And we had got down to verse 22. John chapter 18, verse 22. And when he had said these things, talking about what Jesus had said, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Remember, he had gone to Annas first. This was like the very first trial. And as we'll see as we go through these the next several weeks, these trials were by and large all illegal. I mean, they were unethical. They were, for the most part, just trying to do something to get Jesus killed. I mean, that's really all they were doing. So we see that's what is beginning to happen. Again, he was led to Annas first. And recall, he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. So they led him to Annas. And I wanted to focus a little bit on verse 23, the last one I read about, when it said, "If I've spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" There is nothing wrong with, you know, a self-defense. And this is what Jesus does through different stages of these trials. He defends himself. But he does it truthfully. Okay, he's not dishonest. He gives honest answers. Now, he doesn't defend himself physically, but he does defend himself verbally. So we certainly learn that a verbal self-defense, you know, is a good thing. Okay? It's a good thing. Think about all the truths that Jesus taught in his verbal self-defense. I mean, there were a lot of truths that we're going to see the next few weeks that in defending himself, he presents a lot of truth, knowledge, to these different people. So that can happen with us, too. So I think we learn from this that, you know, a verbal self-defense is certainly a very appropriate thing. Now, Jesus didn't strike out at them, did he? I mean, with his hands or fist or anything like that. He said, remember last week we talked about how he could have called, you know, thousands of angels. But that wasn't the purpose. These trials, when we're kind of talking about them, you know, there were two very different types of trials. There were these Jewish or religious trials. And then there are the civil, what we would call civil trials. But they all really kind of had one purpose. The Jewish people, of course, since they were under Roman rule, they could only hold religious type trials. Okay, they didn't have any civil authority. So they were just holding and only had authority to hold a religious or a trial dealing with their religion. They couldn't hold any other type of trial. And of course that comes up later anyway. But none of these were, you would really call, legitimate trials. They really weren't legitimate, none of them. He had not done anything anyway to be arrested for, like Danny talked about. There wasn't anything that he could really be arrested for yet. And you see that just throughout all of these activities and so forth that goes on. You see what they're trying to do. I mean, it's very obvious what they're doing. Okay, now let's see where we want to go next. Let's go, I think Matthew's account probably includes more than any of the others. Matthew 26. So after he goes to Annas, then he goes to the son-in-law Caiaphas. Matthew 26. So we're continuing in a religious, a Jewish trial. We're going to Caiaphas, who is, you'd say, I guess, the true high priest. Matthew 26, verse 57. And those who had laid hold of Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. Of course, this is what, you know, is considered to be the Sanhedrin. And as I mentioned, this is, you know, his arrest and so forth takes place somewhere around midnight. And then all of these trials before Annas and Caiaphas and Pilate and so forth all get done sometime around 6 or 7. So he goes through all these trials for, you know, 6 hours. And this is the second one. We don't know exactly how long each one of them lasts, but overall we know how much time is taking place. So the Sanhedrin is assembled, and this is early morning. Okay, this isn't like in the middle of the afternoon. They're assembled in the middle of the night, basically, which again shows how illegitimate this trial is. So he's taken to Caiaphas, who's the high priest, and we'll come back and talk about Peter following at a distance at another time. If we look at verse 59, it says, "Now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council," again talking about the Sanhedrin, "sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death." Now, they couldn't put him to death. They couldn't themselves. They didn't have the right. The Romans didn't give them the right to do that. So they had to find something somewhere along the line that they could take to the Romans. If they really wanted him put to death in any sort of legitimate way, they had to find something that the Romans could say, yeah, he's guilty of death. They want him executed for something. So they keep trying, and they've been trying for some time. This isn't the first time, like was brought up. They've been doing this for a long time. So that's what they try to do. So they sought out. Now, these are the religious leaders of the Jewish people, and they're trying to find some people that will lie about Jesus. Can you imagine? I mean, these are you might say, the top ones in all the Jewish religion. And they're wanting, you know, go out and try to find somebody that'll lie about them, which just shows how depraved they were and how corrupt and sinful they were. They wanted Jesus dead more than anything. I mean, that was their primary goal, and it didn't make any difference how they were going to accomplish that. So what if it meant breaking a few commands? They were going to do it anyway, because they apparently thought it was more important to have Jesus murdered than it was for them to be truthful. And just think, there's no telling. I don't know if anyone's ever tried to count how many commands they broke during these trials. Apparently it didn't bother them that they were breaking so many of their own commands. And like I said, it didn't make any difference how far they had to go to get that goal accomplished. You know, it didn't bother them all. And these were the ones who were, I mean, this was the high priest. Okay? This was the high priest, going back to the days of Aaron. So this was the one that people were supposed to look up to as one that really followed the law. The same way with the Sanhedrin and these others. These were the ones that were supposed to be setting an example for how to follow the law and how to be pleasing to God. And they were the ones that were breaking the law more than anybody. And what a sad commentary it was on the Jewish religion in the first century as far as the leaders are concerned. They were turning away from it. So they were seeking false testimony. They were seeking people to lie. Verse 60 says, they found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last, two false witnesses came forward. Now, they obviously were looking hard. They were really seeking out these people. So at last, two false witnesses came forward and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. To build it in 3 days. Now, let's go back to John chapter 2. which of course is where this comes from, begin in verse 19 and read down to verse 22. So they had found these two witnesses that had heard Jesus say, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. So they're going to take that and try to manipulate it, right? Try to twist it around, pervert it, whatever, to get it to say something so they can get Jesus arrested. Well, of course, that's what they're going to try and do. So in verse 62, the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? He says, you know, why aren't you saying something? Why don't you talk? Why don't you make a reply here? But Jesus kept silent. Of course, the future here was going to reveal the truth, wasn't it? It was going to reveal what he meant when he said about raising the temple up again in 3 days. Well, Jesus kept silent, and the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. So Caiaphas, you know, Jesus is not saying anything there. And we really learn about when to answer people and when not to answer people, right? There are some times when it's a good idea not to answer people at all. But then there's other times when he shows us that it's necessary and essential to answer people. So Caiaphas, you can kind of tell by what's written, Caiaphas is getting a little perturbed. He's getting upset. So he just comes out and says, okay, tell us. You know, we want to hear you make the statement. You know, are you the Christ, the Son of God? Because he was wanting him to say something, you know, that would cause this type of problem. I want to come back to Matthew, but turn over first to Mark 14, verse 61. Mark 14, verse 61. Mark 14, 61. But he kept silent and answered nothing. Again, the high priest asked him, saying to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? Jesus said, I am. I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Well, now let's go back to Matthew's account and read Matthew's account of that very same thing. Now remember, the high priest had said, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, it is as you said. What you said is true. I am the Christ, the Son of God. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. And of course, this is exactly the truth, and it was prophesied. This was prophesied. Just a few places. Let's go back. Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Notice some of the similar language that's used there as to what's used in Matthew and Mark. He says, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. That's exactly what was said in the one account. His kingdom shall not be destroyed. He's going to be given a kingdom. He's going to have everlasting dominion. Let's read Mark chapter 12 for a moment, beginning in verse 35 and going through verse 37. Okay, again, some of the same type of language. There's the Lord sitting at the right hand, okay? And David himself calling him Lord, how could he also be his son? Some of the same type of language that is recorded there in Mark and in Matthew. And Jesus said there in Matthew's account, let me go back to Matthew's account for a moment. Matthew's account said, you'll see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. This was also prophesied again back in Psalm 110. Let's go back to Psalm 110 and notice some of these prophecies. Psalm 110, verses 1 and 2. Says, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of your strength out of Zion, rule in the midst of your enemies. And that again is talking about the same thing we were talking about with Jesus, being the Son of Man, the Son of God, sitting at the right hand of the throne of God, Hebrews chapter 1 says the same thing. Hebrews chapter 1, remember, quotes a lot about how Jesus is greater than the angels and how God said to him things that were not said to anyone else. So when Jesus is making this defense there before Caiaphas, he's using this time, of course, to defend himself, but also to teach them the truth about these things. He's not going to destroy any physical temple. That's not why he came. But as we saw back in John chapter 2, he's talking about the fact that he's going to be raised from the dead. And that in the future, now remember, this is early Friday morning. In a few hours, he's going to be dead. A few hours after he makes these statements, he's going to be dead. And then there early on Sunday morning, he's going to be raised from the dead. So in a little over 48 hours from the time he stands before Caiaphas, he's going to be raised from the dead. If you can think about how much is packed into the next 48 hours, that's what's going to happen. So he is telling that I am the Son of God, I am the Son of Man, I am the Christ, I am going to be sitting at the right hand of the power of God, on the right hand of the throne of God, and I'm going to be coming on the clouds of heaven. He says all of that's the exact truth. That is true. There's nothing false about that. And then, of course, Caiaphas doesn't take that very well, does he? Verse 65 of Matthew 26 says, "Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, 'He has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Look, now you've heard his blasphemy. What do you think?' They answered and said, 'He is deserving of death.'" Now that's true. If he was really blaspheming, the law of Moses said he was to be put to death. Yeah, what they're, I think, claiming is they believe he's just a man. And so he is saying that I have the powers of God. I'm divine. And to them that was blasphemy. What he was saying was the absolute truth. But to them, he was attributing to himself powers that only belong to God. And they considered that blasphemy. They were saying that a mere man, because they thought Jesus was just a man, had powers, had divine powers, had miraculous powers. And again, these are the religious leaders. These are all things that were prophesied, and we just read a few of them. These were all things prophesied. And Jesus said, yeah, they have to do with me. They were prophesying about, and of course, Caiaphas got very upset, said, "What do we need to do? Is he deserving of death?" And of course, the other religious leader said, "Yes, he is. He is deserving of death." Of course, they couldn't put him to death. They didn't have the power. And, of course, the Romans could care less about whether he blasphemed or not as far as that part of the law was concerned. But they knew he had to be put to death. Now, there wasn't any doubt in their mind. They were going to do everything in their power to have him put to death. And they all said, "He is deserving of death. He deserves to die." So that's what this religious body, this council, whatever, said, yes, he needs to be guilty of death. Now, the high priest was not allowed to tear his robes. You know, he tore his robes. He wasn't allowed to do that. You go back and read, especially in Leviticus, about what the high priest was supposed to do and not do with his robe. He wasn't allowed to tear his robes. That was a big no-no. But that was like the first thing he did to show how upset he was. Yeah, he wanted to definitely show to everybody how bad Jesus was. Because Jesus was blaspheming in his... So that's what he said, you know, "Do we have need of any more witnesses? We've all heard him ourselves say something that is deserving of death." He said, now we're all witnesses to that. We don't need anybody else to say anything. Look at what he said right in front of us. "Then they spat in his face and beat him, and others struck him with the palms of their hands, saying, 'Prophesy to us, Christ, who is the one who struck you?'" So we see how, I guess you want to, just their hatred. I mean, their hatred is starting to really come to the surface. You know, they hit him, slapped him, beat him. These were the religious people. These were the leaders. This was the Sanhedrin Council. These were the ones who the common, everyday, ordinary Jewish person looked up to with great respect. And look at how they were reacting to Jesus. I mean, just like animals, basically. They were reacting just like animals would react. They couldn't have done much worse, and they're getting ready to, aren't they? Are getting ready to. That's probably a good place to stop. We will, Lord willing, kind of pick up there next week and look at what begins to happen next, because things really pick up in these trials. Thank you for all your comments today.